The Unitarian half of our Unitarian Universalist heritage can sometimes bias us to the intellectual, the rational, the written, and the spoken word. But the Universalist half of our UU heritage has always been more comfortable with the emotional, the bodily, the need to move past words and incarnate them in action to build the more just and peaceful world we dream about. And one of the reasons we're committed to building a strong music program here at UUCF, and one of the reasons we have, like this morning, an annual music and poetry emphasis in a service, is that both poetry and music engage us in ways beyond what can be contained in prose alone. Poetry uses language playfully to gesture beyond the straightforward meaning of most prose text, offering the possibility of breaking open fixed ideas and emerging new meaning and possibilities. As Emily Dickinson once mused about the power of poetry, "Tell all the truth, but tell it slant." Success in circuit lies too bright for our infirm delight, the truth's superb surprise. As lightning to the children eased with explanation kind, the truth must dazzle gradually, or every man be blind. And through lyrics, those poetic words set to tune, music often takes the power of that poetic truth told slant, in the Dickensian sense, taking that prose and that words to a much higher level than might otherwise have been possible. As the Cambridge professor George Steiner has said, music is at once cerebral in the highest degree, and it is at the same time somatic, carnal, and searching out the resonances of our bodies at levels deeper than will or consciousness. Consider the full bodied experience, all that is taken in through your body, through your eyes, through your ears, of being in a sanctuary when an organ is playing at full volume with all the stops out, or being in a concert hall amidst the harmonic swelling climax of a symphony, or being in a rock concert in the middle of a rapturous crowd, physically feeling the power of the speakers, the sound coming out, hitting your body, and of yourself slowly going incrementally deaf, right? It changes us. It transforms us in many different ways. The power and poetry of music hits us and engages us on so many levels at the same time. Stacey Horn, in her book Imperfect Harmony, Finding Happiness Through Singing with Others, explores the neurological research that is increasingly supporting what many of us who have sung in choirs have long known, that singing, even alone in the shower, but especially in a long group session like a choir rehearsal or a choir performance, can produce what is known as a singer's high, triggering the release of neurochemicals that parallel what happens in our brains and our bodies, like a runner's high. As the title of an article about Horn's work says, "Join the choir. Science shows it'll make you feel better." You can get them to testify later. Or just give yourself permission to sing robustly from the congregation during our hymns. It's good for you. There's a famous Reformation theologian that wrote in instructions in the inside of a hymnal that if God granted you a beautiful voice, sing loudly and share that voice with creation. And if God gave you a lousy voice, sing loudly and get revenge on God. So sing loudly either way. Now, in addition to the full body aspect of music that we've been exploring, George Steiner goes on to explore the ways in which music can also be what could be called sacramental, a way of experiencing the sacred, which is sometimes called the depth dimension in life. Those moments when we feel fully alive, fully connected with the people and the world around us, when we are fully present in the present moment and aware of the depth and the richness of the moment that we are in, even as it arises and passes away, allowing the next present moment to emerge, and knowing that we should be fully present to it because it will pass away. In the Christian tradition, St. Augustine of Hippo famously said that the one who sings prays twice, which is one way of expressing the difference, for example, of speaking the words of the Roman Catholic Mass aloud compared to the power of singing Bach's B minor Mass. And it can perhaps help in this particular instance that the lyrics are in Latin. So if you don't agree with them, unless your Latin is particularly good, you don't have to worry about that and can focus on the aesthetic beauty, allowing that experience to capture and enrapture you. Or from a more humanist perspective, the 20th century composer Mauricio Kegel says that musicians may not all believe in God, but they all believe in Bach. Meaning that the transformative and the transfixing power of great music can be intrinsically sufficient in and of itself. And the range of music's power of the sacred in music to energize us to exercise harder than we would if we didn't have those earbuds in our ears, or to meet us where we are in our brokenness, is captured beautifully in the opening stanza of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah. I've heard there was a secret chord that David played, and it pleased the Lord. And it goes like this: the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, and the major lift, the baffled king composing Hallelujah. The fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift. Whether music is major or minor, fast or slow, can make all the difference in shaping our experience. And one practice that I invite you to consider that some of you may do, even in an informal way already, is a practice called Audio Divina. Some of you may have heard of Lectio Divina, or may be familiar with the lectionary, which is a collection of Christian readings. It's that same word, lection, which means reading, and divina just means divine. So it's a way of experiencing that depth dimension in life. Lectio Divina, when you're reading, paying particular attention, like with the poetry you heard this morning, what word or phrase particularly resonated with you? When we first put this piece up by Hope Sorensen, The River, we invited you to do a Visio Divina. What parts of that image particularly resonate with you and why? So an Audio Divina is paying attention to music, often even music without words, and what part really moves you, and how might that word or phrase, either in word or a musical phrase, why does that resonate so deeply inside of you, and where might the meaning be? What might be the meaning emerging for you, and what might that have to teach you about your life or the life of the world? In 2012, a lovely independent film was released, A Late Quartet. Have any of you seen it, A Late Quartet? So just a few of you. It's really worth seeing. It stars Christopher Walken, Catherine Keener, and the late Philip Seymour Hoffman, who it's worth now seeing, of course, and was then for his performance alone. The film is about the internal dynamics, the bonds, and the rivalry of a world-famous string quartet based in New York City preparing for their 25th anniversary concert, which they hope will just be a celebratory event, continuing to celebrate their success. But it's complicated by the revelation that the cellist of the group, and each part of a string quartet is pivotally important, that he has an illness that will force him to retire. The film's inspired by and built around Beethoven's Opus 131 string quartet in C-sharp minor, which is very much worth listening to if you're not familiar with that piece. And one of the most memorable lines from the film is when Walken's character, who is the one wrestling with the diagnosis that is forcing his premature retirement from creating the beautiful music that he loves, in the spirit of Audio Divina, he says, "I can be grateful, and so must you be, for even one singular phrase, one transcendent moment." That is the sacred in music or poetry. And perhaps a piece of poetry or music has really resonated with you this morning. If so, I invite you to savor that piece. Maybe take it on a walk this afternoon and allow it to reverberate through you and continue to reflect on what it might mean for you today.